and welcome to the 20-minute hit, back once again to bring you all the sporting action from the last 7 days and a huge weekend of sport last weekend on both sides of the Atlantic. Leicester City thumping Manchester City at the Etihad. Surely now they are the title favourites for the Premier League. And of course, Super Bowl 50, the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning, with a lot of help from that Broncos defence, beating the Carolina Panthers to take the 50th Super Bowl. And of course, Cam Newton very unhappy at the end of that one. I'm Ollie Wilson, sports broadcaster and commentator for TalkSport, BT Sport and various outlets around the world, bringing you today's podcast. As always, I'm joined by the one, the only, the man who could be found on the web pages of the World Wide Web and of course on TalkSport as well, Mr. Paul McDonald joining me. Paul, pleasure to catch up with you, man. A fantastic weekend of sport that we had last weekend.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get my sleeping schedule back to normal after staying up for the worst Super Bowl of all time. So,
Oh dear, we're going to fall out today if you're saying it's the worst Super Bowl of all time. A man that might disagree with you as well is a man who joins us on the show today. Host of the Gridiron Show podcast, contributor to Gridiron Magazine, and of course to any other outlet that will pay him money as well to talk NFL, football and any other sport under the sun. Mr. Will Gavin joining us here, mate. Will, pleasure to chat with you as always. How was California? And don't make me too jealous.
I feel like I'm going to get in trouble the moment I start talking about it, because you've already lambasted me at least twice for going. luckily for you, I am feeling particularly under the weather since coming back. I've caught some kind of flu or cold on Radio Row, so you get to at least lord that over me. No, it was a fantastic time. And okay, it was not the most entertaining Super Bowl of all time for the neutral, but if you love defensive football and great storylines, then there was plenty to love about it.
Well, let's kick off today's show with Super Bowl 50. We're going to be spending an extended period of time on it because, of course, it A, was Super Bowl 50, B, it was Peyton Manning's perhaps last hoorah, and C, it was a bit of a turn up for the books, really, because everybody going into this one, Will, was saying, look, if anybody's going to win this and win this well, it's going to be the Carolina Panthers, because they both have the defense and the offense to be able to take on this Denver Broncos side. And it just wasn't the case at all from the word go, pretty much.
I spent the entire week trying to convince myself and other people that the Broncos had some kind of chance in this game. And when it came to the Friday evening and us making our predictions on our show, I almost swayed myself enough that I took the Broncos. But I just thought, you know what, it's rhetoric, it's the classic, yeah, we can't go into an entire week going, nope, this is going to be a blowout, no chance that Denver are going to win this one at all. So I came very close to switching my pick. And the fact of the matter is that you mentioned it being Peyton Manning's last hurrah. Peyton Manning is basically the only reason this game wasn't a blowout, but in the other direction. The first ever time that a Super Bowl winning team has accrued less than 200 offensive yards. It was two phenomenal defensive performances, and you have to feel bad for some of the defensive players on the Carolina side of the ball. Coney Ealy had an MVP-style game, but when you get seven sacks, which matches the 1985 Bears all-time for quarterback hits, quarterback sacks, then you know you're in for a tough day for Carolina. And the Denver defense was just dominant. It was absolutely ludicrous as a performance. Von Miller with the two forced fumbles at either end of the game, making the big impact. But we probably should have seen it coming. Of the 49 previous Super Bowls, 40 of them had been won by the team with the higher-ranked defense. And as they say, it's that massive old cliche, defense wins championships. On this occasion, you had to put everything down to the defense in this game, to the point where even, I think it was halfway through the second quarter, they stopped throwing on third downs, the Broncos. They decided there and then, we're not going to score any points on offense. Let's just put this on our defense straight away. Let's run the ball. Let's eat clock from as early as halfway through the second quarter. They did exactly that, and it ended up working out for them. Wade Phillips is a little bit of a genius.
Paul, I'm guessing that's why you're thinking it was one of the most boring Super Bowls that you've watched then, because, as you say, the Broncos were happy to go for run the ball on third down by midway through the second quarter, and it was just a smothering on one of the most entertaining sides that we've seen, the Carolina Panthers, this year. The smiles, the bravado was completely gone.
Yeah, it was almost like a Jose Mourinho team shutting down Barcelona at times, I felt, when I was watching it. But when you gather the casual fans like myself, I must admit, to watch the playoffs and watch the Super Bowl, you do want to see throws. You don't want to see catches. You do want to see touchdowns, and that's just the very nature of it, very nature of sport, not just NFL. And unfortunately, the game didn't have much to offer in that regard. And I completely agree with what we're saying. Like, a lot of people have suggested that it might have been down to the experience of Manning versus the kind of a Cam Newton who's still got to learn the game, essentially, after having such an incredible season. I think Newton will come again. I think he has been a bit impetuous in his response to defeat, but that will come with age and come with experience, and I fully expect to see Newton back on the stage at some point in the future with the Panthers or without.
I mean, we can talk about the game in terms of the technicalities of what happened on the day. But as you say, as both of you said, it was just a swarm from that Denver defense, and Carolina weren't able to use the three-headed monster, if you will, of Newton's passing, Newton's running, and Jonathan Stewart's running game as well to get the ball moving. But it's interesting you pick up on the fallout there as well, Paul, because there's been a lot of discussion about the way Cam Newton has reacted in his post-match press conference after the game, walking out, although albeit he was put in a room where Denver Broncos players were talking about their game plan working perfectly to shut down Cam. Very difficult, I'm sure, as a pro athlete to work, get to a Super Bowl, listen to somebody suddenly saying that while you're trying to suffer in a quite humiliating defeat, I think, for somebody like Cam, who's had that bravado this year. And interesting as well, Will, that you mentioned the 85 Bears, which is a defense that always gets brought up when you're talking about these modern day teams of which is the greatest defense of the modern era. We were talking about the Seahawks with it 2 years ago after their blowout at Denver in New York. Now suddenly everybody's talking about Denver perhaps having the defense that could match the 85 Bears. The legacy fallout then from this game is going to be talked about for a long time. Let's kick it off with Cam first. How has his reaction, walking out in the post-match press conference, the one-word answers, if you will, how's that going to affect his persona, which wasn't great with a lot of people with these open letters to Cam with his bravado on the sidelines this year?
Look, I want to stick up for Cam Newton a little bit. First of all, I was in the room when all of that happened and standing not more than 20 feet away from him. And you felt really sorry for the guy, because the fact of the matter is that everything he's done before this, whether it was in his first season, whenever he made a mistake through an interception, he'd get to the sideline, put a towel on his head, he'd take it very introspectively. People had a go at him for that. Then in this season and the previous, when he did it exactly the opposite and came out with the bravado, and it's not this bravado of getting in another team's face in the way that the Seahawks did for the past 2 years, but it's very much celebrating with his backup quarterbacks, handing the ball to kids in the first row of the crowd. You know, all that stuff is actually, I think, great for the game.
It's fun, isn't it? It's just fun. It's people enjoying the sport.
Absolutely, 100%. And the fact is, you were there last year, and you know that those press conferences in the previous season, now they've decided to do this kind of media day style, put 6 or 7 podiums out and let a bunch of players talk at once, as well as doing locker room availability. They separated the two teams last year, which makes so much more sense. He came out the following morning. He kind of apologised for his behaviour. He gave a pretty reasonable and quite witty excuse for it. And we moved on. And actually, being in the room at the time, I didn't feel like there was a huge issue with it. It felt like a story, but not as big of a story as it's become. I think when you talk about legacy in these two quarterbacks, I agree with Paul. I think Cam Newton has all the tools, plus Dave Gettleman has built a fantastic team there. And it looks like if they spend wisely again this season, I think if they cut the right players, I think if Charles Johnson goes, that saves them 12-odd million. And they look to improve. They've got to re-sign Josh Norman. That's big for them. But if they improve in the right ways this offseason, they could be back as soon as Super Bowl 51 in Houston. From Peyton Manning's perspective, I'm stunned that he hasn't come out and retired already, unless he's got some big plans for it. Because if he watches this game back, he will realise, as I've said already, that he was the only reason that the Broncos didn't absolutely hammer the Panthers. His arm strength was so limited. You look at the Coney Ealy pick in particular, where he just horrendously underthrew the ball and didn't even spot him. He limited this team rather than taking this team to an elevated height. And he has to retire now. And when he does retire, we had the Hall of Fame voting last week, and from what we understand, they deliberated over who the 5 modern-day finalists were going to be for 8 hours. It took them, of those 8 hours, 9 seconds to decide whether or not Brett Favre was getting in. I think it'll take them half of that to decide on Peyton Manning in 5 years' time. So walk away. You'll earn plenty of money from your endorsements and everything. You don't need to go back for the final year of that contract. And just go with your head held high. Because if he comes back and just pulls his legacy apart with another terrible season, people will remember that This way they'll remember him on the podium, holding the Lombardi, going out on top. That's the way he should do it.
It might be interesting as well to see if he does go back, if that smile actually comes back to Eli Manning's face as well. One of the comedy moments of the Super Bowl, watching Eli.
It all depends how much more Budweiser he's got to sell, to be honest.
Yeah, and did you notice that the first person he congratulated as well as he walked onto the field was none other than Papa John as well? I mean, talk about selling out. Peyton Manning's legacy has just been gone up in dollar bills, in my opinion, to be honest. Just very quickly then, for the game of NFL itself, because Carolina have been a team that have split the fans kind of down the middle this year in terms of having that. Some people have called it arrogance, others have called it confident swagger, others have said they're just having school ground fun, if you will, on the football field. For the NFL, is it better that Peyton went out like this, or is it, would it have been better if Carolina, for I guess for the fans of the game, had won it and been that kind of great, laughing, jovial side in the locker rooms afterwards, and you'd had that celebration instead? Which has a better impact and better spin for the game, do you think, or should have?
Storyline-wise, it was all about Peyton, and in the week building up to it, everyone was set. You spoke to any former player, any current player. Everyone wanted to see Peyton go out on top. I think it would have been great to have seen a better game and a better performance from Cam Newton, because I do think he is, of the class of quarterbacks who have come out in the last 3 or 4 years, when you look at Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, these guys who... already have established themselves as people who should have great careers. At the moment, he is, for me, between the physicality, the quality of play, what he's had to deal with injuries, he's the guy who's performing at the highest level so far for where he's elevated his team to. So I'd love to have seen him win it. But when it came down to a true legend of the game, very few people are able, Brian Balding has said this to us, but very few people are able to say that they truly changed the game of football. Probably 10, 15 players all time, and he is one of those players.
And he's one of the most annoying people to watch as well, in terms of just running down that play clock time and time again, making changes. It's interesting on that Cam legacy as well, very quickly, in that he did have the troubles, of course, with his college career before going to Auburn, and has said that he is always a sulker. It'll be interesting to see how he comes back next year after this kind of media hounding that he's taken in the fallout from the Super Bowl. Let's move now to this side of the Atlantic, talk about the Premier League. And Paul, I know you're desperate to talk about this today. Liverpool Football Club and their ticket prices. A 77th minute protest by the fans due to the fact that prices were going to be raised to £77 for next season. The Fenway Sports Group, though, in the last 24 hours has done its nice little U-turn and has frozen prices. A lot of pressure on them to do that as well, considering the new TV deal that's worth, all in all, around about £8 billion or so to the Premier League in the grand scheme of things, and that fans still were going to have price increases on their tickets despite the teams benefiting from all this mass TV money coming in. This, I guess, is finally a chance where the fans have turned around and said, look, we've actually made an impact with one of these fan protests. We've got the club to listen, and we've got exactly what we wanted in terms of the prices being frozen.
No, absolutely. It's fan power at its finest, and I have to laud the Liverpool fans for being able to organise something like this and manage to get 10,000 people to walk out of the stadium. It wouldn't have happened in many other places. That being said, what chairman and what board of directors are trying to get the fans to realise at clubs now is, while the Premier League is the biggest and best league in the world as far as they're concerned, there is a massive demand to watch Premier League games. Now, I don't think for 1 minute that when the Liverpool board sat down to reassess the ticket prices, they thought, first and foremost, I'm going to rip off the fans here. I think they thought that we've got a waiting list for season tickets, we've got a waiting list for people travelling from overseas to come and watch these games. They're thinking to themselves, we need to price this appropriately based on the level of demand behind it. Now, football fans don't like to think of football in those terms, in those in business ideas. But let's face it, they are intrinsically linked these days. And if Liverpool thought they could price those tickets more expensively and get the same number of people through the gate, then that's what they tried to do. And you just need to look at Arsenal, who have vehemently opposed this 20s plenty away tickets for the Emirates next season. That's been opposed by the board of directors. Now, are they seeing it realistically in terms of the economic value of football clubs, or are Liverpool fans just simply being naive as to the situation?
Well, I think there's a point in part of the demand, obviously, is the increase in tourism that you get. I know when you go down to a lot of these London grounds now, particularly the likes of Tottenham, the likes of Arsenal, the likes of Chelsea, the number of just general tourists, in the same way that perhaps you and I have been across to go and see Serie A games, to go and see Real Madrid games, has rocketed up phenomenally in the last 10 years. So that's where a lot of the extra demand comes in, because the Premier League is that global brand. And it's no surprise that people want to go and see the Premier League all the time, because it's one of those leagues where the stadiums are always packed. It has been throughout the 90s when we had these smaller grounds, and because of that increased demand, because the extra the full stadiums have increased the marketability of the league abroad, it has then allowed clubs to expand their stadium size, get more fans in the grounds, and there's no doubt that it's obvious they can charge a lot more. I think this is poignant though, because at least it shows that there is a way for the fans to fight back against this kind of financial takeover that English football is going through at the moment. You look at the player salaries that are rocketing up. You look at the number of extra corporate facilities that are going into these grounds, and teams are moving largely in part of there not being enough corporate facilities currently at their new stadiums, and moving across to bigger and better stadiums and facilities throughout the country. At least this is something that the fans have then shown that they can slightly control in a game that is really being taken out of their hands completely.
I mean, for me, I think the fact of the matter is that we all want to be idealistic, and we all want to say it's a working man's game. It's it's on the terraces. We have this real romanticised idea of football in the kind of 40s, 50s, 60s, where it was something that you did after you went and did a hard day's work at the weekend. You went to the pub and you went and watched the game for, whatever it cost back then, a shilling, I don't know. But... The fact of the matter is I think you nailed it with the tourism thing. Certainly, friends I have who are season ticket holders at Tottenham, when they're unable to go to games, they'll resell their tickets to official ticket resellers, the StubHubs, the Ticketmaster marketplaces, those sorts of people. And they say the people who buy them time and time again aren't Tottenham fans, but they are, exactly as you say, tourists coming over and wanting to watch the games. For Liverpool fans, I think what they have to look at is the fact that at least some of the money is being pumped back into the team. I'd be far more livid if I was an Arsenal fan who have basically used these hugely inflated ticket prices to pay off a loan on a stadium, to balance their books, to run it like a business, and actually consistently not quite achieve. Okay, they've won two FA Cups recently, but not quite achieve what they could have achieved if they'd invested a bit more of that fan money back into the team.
It's always funny whenever we talk about this sort of thing, and it always ends up coming back to Arsenal and their lack of achievement despite the money. It could only have really happened, I think, as well, at a club like Liverpool, which their fans are such a big part of, I guess, the chemistry that makes up everything, including the atmosphere around that football club. Let's look at what's going to be happening on the pitch and what happened on the pitch last weekend quickly as well. City against Leicester, the big turn up for the books. Everybody doubted that Leicester could do it, but went to the Etihad, got a magnificent 3-1 win, of all people, Robert Huth with two strikes. They take on Arsenal now at the Emirates. This is crunch time for the top four, really, with Arsenal, Leicester and Tottenham and City taking each other on this Sunday. Arguably the biggest Premier League weekend of the season, Paul.
Yeah, I think there's two stories here. I think the first story is quite obviously that Leicester will be seen as the real deal now in a lot of people's eyes, because they've went to the Etihad and comprehensively won the game. But I think story number two is that City were an absolute disgrace on Saturday. For a team that cost that much, it was embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. I genuinely think that pound for pound, Joe Hart has the worst back four in England in front of him at the moment. But it's astonishingly bad.
Is any of this because of the Pep Guardiola fallout? There was talk that that could have been the case, that players start to get distracted, perhaps not playing for Pellegrini as much. Do you think there's anything in that at all, or City just perennially bad?
If you're going to get distracted, Ollie, do you not want to prove yourself and become a better player so that when Pep Guardiola walks through the door, he sees someone who he wants to retain? Because if Pep Guardiola watched that game on Saturday, he wouldn't have retained any of those players with the exception of Aguero and Hart. The rest of them will be on the way out. And I'm including guys like Silva in that, because Silva has not had a good season. I think Sterling looks extremely raw. Yaya Toure is currently stealing a wage at Man City with his performances. And the back four, as I've mentioned, are a total disgrace. And I agreed with a lot of people when they said that the way that Guardiola has almost cuckolded Pellegrini's position at City by making himself available for it and forced Pellegrini out the side door. I did feel a bit of sympathy for Pellegrini, but he has got a hugely expensive defence there that he has completely incapable of organising properly. And I think tactically, Pellegrini has let City down over the last 18 months. So I think it's time for a change. And I just can't see that City team winning the league based on that performance at the weekend.
It's an expensive defence, but it's one that's had many holes in it for a long time. We've always said that Demichelis has mistakes in him, and without company, it's a back four that always looks a bit iffy, especially with such attacking, aggressive fullbacks that they have as well. And it was just time that a side like Leicester that play that fast counter-attacking football, especially at the Etihad, where they can play that because City will come at them, are going to catch them out. It was a big result, I think, really, that was actually waiting to happen to this Manchester City back four. The question is, for this weekend, can Leicester take it into the Emirates and win away at Arsenal and really make themselves the odds-on title favourites, if you will? And can Tottenham put their name right in the mix as well with a win against City this weekend?
My problem is that everyone's ready to name Leicester City the de facto Premier League winners this week thanks to that result. And there's still a third of the season left to go. I know they've got a 5-point cushion there. And yes, the fixtures this weekend lean towards the idea that if they can get a result, whether it be a point or all three at the Emirates, that's going to be able to really build their case with the other teams facing each other, etc., etc. But time and time again in this league, we've seen teams, whether it be Newcastle back in the day, whether it be Liverpool 2-3 seasons ago, where a team comes out of seemingly nowhere, has a great season, but falls away at the last minute. And I just think the consistency and the experience in that City side could be too much for Leicester over the course of 13 more games.
I feel brutal because every time you've spoken, Will, on the last two topics, I've given you the buzzer, and it's nothing to do with you, I promise you. But that is all we have time for here on the 20-minute hit this week. Paul, a pleasure to chat with you as always this week. I'm sure I'll catch up with you next, of course. And Will, thank you very much for joining us as well and giving us your lowdown on Super Bowl 50 in the Premier League. We'll be back in 7 days time or so. Until then, enjoy the sport, take care, and have a very good week indeed.